Hello, guys. I want to welcome you back to the Era of Conversation. All right, so today's episode is going to be quite quick. It shouldn't be too long at all. I just wanted to have a quick conversation about wildlife tourism. Because it's summertime now, we're all on vacation and posting our vacation pictures and where we're going and the fun excursions and activities that we're getting up to. On top of the fact that it has been something that's been on my mind for a while. So we're gonna come from the point of wildlife tourism while you're on vacation, doing these different excursions and when you interact with the wildlife. So in a lot of different countries that are well sought after, there are different ways for people to make for local people to make money, depending on their culture and the importance of the environment to your destination. If you have a destination that's well known for the wildlife, then the locals are more encouraged to do certain activities and excursions for the tourists and the visitors that come to that area of that country in regards to animals and things like that. Many different countries. So we're not going to focus on one specific country, but we're focusing on the fact that when you go to these excursions, yes, you want to support local businesses, and the locals do this based on demand because they're just trying to feed their families. Completely understandable. However, you have to look out for certain stuff because these animals, one, are sometimes not kept in the best condition. And that could be a cultural thing or just, a lack of resources or a lack of awareness. A lot of people that have these animals, as I said, a few moments ago, they just do it based on the fact that it's something that can feed their family. It's something that the tourists come there for so they can get money and charge a little bit more for certain activities and do what they have to do to make ends meet. And there's nothing wrong with that. However, when you have a market that's driven by that, your interest in that can easily influence how they change the way that they keep their animals, the way that they pertain, the way that they procure their animals. Sorry, words. So a lot of that is driven by what tourists and what people pay for. So you do have a big say and a big influence on how those industries run. Sorry. So sometimes it's the way that they keep them, lack of resources. Sometimes these animals don't have that enrichment available in the way that they're kept. So sometimes it's their enclosure that's the problem. Sometimes it's the way that they're on extreme cases, medicated to interact with the public or trained to interact with the public. This is something that you saw a lot in like few years back, before animal welfare really came to the forefront and animal management was something that was taught and vi revisited multiple times. Now they have a standard for captive animals that needs to be met. Globally, and they have people that go and audit that. But prior to that, you saw it a lot where everybody had some sort of wildlife or wild animal in their possession. In countries that don't have regulated bans or regulated law over the jurisdiction of wildlife. You get people that have big cats in the yard. I mean, I'm sure you guys have seen the Netflix shows and all of that. In regards to the establishments that are kind of like SeaWorld and, the zoos and the aquariums, that's a little bit different because they are, that's a whole different conversation. I don't want to have that right now. I just wanted to focus on out of the professional establishments, when you do have people that are just trying to make ends meet and go to different tours. I went to Florida, and I went to mini golf. And in this mini golf area, you have a chance to interact with these alligators. And I am from Bermuda. We don't have We don't have alligators in Bermuda. Our wildlife is a little bit different, but not that extreme. So I had never done it before, and it's always something I wanted to do. I'm an animal person, and at this point, I had been to school, so you know, I had known everything that I knew, and still went and done this encounter. I definitely felt more than one way about it, because on the pros, we always have to do pros and cons. It's never all doom and gloom. So on the upside, you know, when people have these certain excursions, and we're just detouring a little bit from the Florida one, I'll circle back around. But when people have these excursions on the pro side, one, sometimes it's for conservation purposes. So it brings awareness to these animals. You know, that happens a lot when you go to zoos and aquariums, you know. It's so that these people, like the public, can physically see a creature and be like, you know, can you help us save this endangered animal or this threatened animal, you know, all that type of stuff. Sometimes it can also be for the benefit of the animal in certain cases. So there are pros to it. However, as I said, you just have to look out for certain stuff. So the signs that I saw were the way that the alligators were kept. They were able to be separated from the general public that will come in to play mini golf. But the conditions that they in, they weren't horrible, but they could have been better. And it's just one of those things when you have somebody that regulates this and comes to an establishment and says, okay, if this is what you're going to do and you have the licenses or whatever to do all of this, then you need to meet certain standards. And also, the other thing that I noticed is that they were only up to a certain size, because if somebody is coming to mini golf, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're not... you know, they're general public. They're not really trained and all of that type of stuff. So you have to have a certain size and a certain type of alligator to do these things. So I don't know what they do with them once they reach a certain size. That was the other question that I didn't ask, but that I was thinking. What they do is, if you want to do it, you pay for it or whatever. They bring this thing out and it's taped. The hind legs taped to the tail and the front legs taped and eyes covered, which makes, actually, I don't think the eyes were covered. I think I made a mental note that the eyes should have been covered to lessen the stress of the animal. That's another thing when you are having an encounter with this animal, because I'm an animal person, I knew when the alligator had enough, but we were in a very noisy environment because they did it right at the entrance, so everybody can see us taking pictures and holding this alligator. And I was just like, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't feel comfortable doing it. So I gave the alligator back to the gentleman that, came out and handed it to me. And, you know, it was nice to have that brief experience, but not in that manner. Cause I don't think I, you know, the industry that I'm in, I can easily go and interact with an alligator, under the right circumstances again. However, I don't think I will be picking up a baby alligator anytime soon. So it was nice to have it. It was kind of like those one done things. However, that's where the problem comes in, and I felt so guilty afterwards. Just to feed into this, you know, stigma and the whole wildlife tourism problem, only because of the place that we went to and I saw how everything was going. So it makes it very difficult. Same thing happened when I was walking through a mall in Florida. You know, this gentleman had a few parrots actually on his arm. And as we were walking through the mall, he just had the parrots hanging out. So in that case, maybe the parrots are injured and they're unable to fly. So he gives them a little bit of outside time. But I didn't see an area where he can pack them away so that they can have their own free space where they're not stressed, away from the public, where they have a place to hide and just, you know, settle themselves back out. Back down. That's very important with animals. They need their own space separate from what they're doing with the public, even if it is just to interact. They, you know, they need their own time. And I didn't see that. He just kind of had the bird out, and you know, in the middle of a mall, especially during high season, you know, it can be very hectic. People are very loud. Children are very loud, and it's just a lot. And I was just like, I don't know, a bit stressed. And the fact that I had seen it a lot, and it does happen a lot everywhere you go, and you think, oh, you know, it's okay to just go and interact with this animal if they have, like, parrots. It's like, oh, let's go see the parrot. Or if they, if you're at some sort of establishment and they have a little section where they have some exotic animal just hanging out, like, you have to think, at the end of the day, where does this animal sleep? You know, where do they go? Do they stay in this little area? And it's not a a common question that people come across. You know, you're on holiday, you're on your vacation, you go to this exotic part of the world and you really want to interact with wildlife because you love animals and you just want to go and do this excursion and have this encounter. But, you know, what impact are you creating? Because the more people that say, no, you know, I would prefer to go to an establishment that is, you know, professional, has all the guidelines, you know, we know what happens to their animals. And when you ask these people questions and they're evasive with their answers, or if they answer too quickly and it seems very scripted, because sometimes they'd be, oh, no, the animals don't stay here. You know, we put them away at night. Okay, well, you know, am I able to see their enclosures? Like, that'll be really interesting. And if they're like, no, well, you can't see them, or I like to kind of come back later. So the whole time we were at mini golf, I was looking to see what was happening. And thankfully, you know, they didn't have too many alligator encounters. And I would like to think that they switch them out. However, you know, off the bat, alligators do look similar. So I wasn't able to keep track of whether that was the same one that I had or if it was another one and they switch them out. Each animal has their own personality. Animals are not expected to behave a certain way. So some alligators may be angry and, you know, not necessarily like to be held. I don't know if they're just so used to it that, you know, they kind of become accustomed, if they give them some sort of medication or something to keep them calm, or put them in a docile state. I don't know. But these are the type of questions that you should ask, especially when they're large mammals, because large mammals are very, well, any wild animal, I wouldn't even say just large mammals, but you encounter more large mammals than you would any other type, because that's kind of what people like to see, you know. So yeah, just something to think about when you go on holiday. Don't be the first person to jump on these wildlife tourism excursions when it comes to animal encounters. You know, ask the right questions, look at the conditions, look at how the animal is behaving. And, you know, when you think that they're had enough, I understand you've paid for it, but maybe just step off, because that handler most of the time is not going to say, okay, you know, that's enough, they need a break. And unfortunately, that's where you see the situations that happen on Instagram and Facebook as you scroll, where somebody is on vacation being in an uncomfortable situation with somebody's wild animal. So just something to think about, because a lot of people don't, you know, ask those questions. It's just like, oh, it's a bird or it's an animal. You know, it's a monkey in a cage. That's just like, have a look at it. It's just so cool that I get to see this, because I don't do this all the time. But, you know, a lot of animals get stolen out of the wild to fund this industry so that they have animals ready available. A lot of them get taken at birth, because for a wild animal, you would have to train it and have it become accustomed from young, not from the age that it's taken from the wild. That would be way too much work. So it's just something to consider, especially when you come to countries which their culture doesn't directly care about animal welfare or management. You know, I don't have any specific country in mind. There are a few. But, you know, they are really just trying to make ends meet, but you can influence the way that they cater to their animals because of your interests and your need for them to be in the better conditions, and to disclose and have just transparency about how these animals are trained, where they're kept. You know, they should have a criteria as to how these animals interact with the public. So, you know, criteria meaning more like a schedule. So this animal is on a certain roster for a day, for a certain time, and they get rotated between each animal. You know, maybe today is the rest day, or every few hours they have a rest for a few hours, and then it's like a morning shift and a night shift, or, you know, encounter time. And then they should have a cue when they know that they've had enough. I don't know. It's just a lot of different things that I, off the top of my head, would think about when it comes to having an encounter. So when I had my snake, Zara, I would ask people that are afraid of snakes, oh, you know, you can meet her whenever, just let me know. So, you know, I had a few people come over sporadically, like, just, you know, throughout the time that I lived in the UK. And they would meet her, you know, and I know people afraid of snakes. So I held her. So I was very particular about the way that these people encountered her, because I don't want to stress her out. And I know that when people are scared of stuff, sometimes stuff just happens, you know. So I would say, you know, I'm going to hold her first. But I did it with her facing away from the person so that they felt more comfortable. Obviously, have her head away from them. She's not a snake that bites. I've in the time that I had her over the 4 or 5 years, maybe six. I never had an experience with her biting me or anybody else. That's just because I give her space. I know when she's had enough. So anyway, sorry, I got hiccups. So they're able to touch her, you know, with her head facing away while I'm holding her. If they feel comfortable doing that, then while I have her front half, you know, I'd loosen her bottom half and maybe wrap her around the wrist because she was big enough where she would wrap around somebody's wrist. And I would still be holding her front half. And if they felt comfortable with that, then I would let her go. You know, the ground rules were no sudden movements because you're not going to stress out my snake. If you feel like you need to let her go, do not drop her. Don't scream. Don't do any of that. Give me advance warning so that I can take her from you before anything happens because it's not about, you know, it's not about anybody trying to hurt my snake or my snake getting scared because somebody's done something because we're entering her environment. You know, this is her time. And it was only that one person. It's not a, oh, pass the snake around to five different people back to back. Some people do that, and snakes are fine to do that. You know, they're normally pretty chill and they don't necessarily mind, especially when you have like the ball pythons and stuff that kind of just sit there. But Zara was a movie snake. Like she didn't just sit there and let you hold her. She would move. So I couldn't give her to more than one person because that would stress her out. I was fine to walk around and hold her for, you know, a few minutes at a time and then I'll give her space. You know, I'm happy to kind of let her slither around me while I'm talking to people. Used to do it all the time. But you know, I'd probably like if that person was fine or whatever, okay, maybe one more person, and then after that, she has to go back and do her own thing, you know. So that was my criteria, and that's the certain things that I would look out for. Obviously, her enclosure was, you know, to the T. She got fed regularly, she looked healthy. But meeting her off the bat, you know, you wouldn't really know that she got fed regularly, but you can see her in her enclosure. You can see how particular I am about the conditions that you interact with her. You know, those type of things. And it's all about keeping the animal stress-free, and the type of animal, as I said, when you have the large mammals, it's more difficult to meet their conditions and what they require to be stable in life. But anyway, that's a whole different conversation. And at some point, we can have a conversation about animals in captivity and what that looks like, and you know, my view on that, and then some pros and cons and different perspectives because I find that to be a very interesting topic. But I hope that was helpful and some sort of insight. But always be wary and dig into those wildlife encounters that you come across when you're on vacation and on holiday. They can be more sinister than you think. So definitely do your research while you're booking online or you come across a brochure. Sometimes there's wildlife safaris can be iffy too. You know, do that extra research, thoroughly search their websites, and if they have Instagram, that's even better. And see who they're affiliated with, and you can kind of feel more comfortable. I wouldn't just take the cheapest one or the first one available. A lot of those petting zoos are the same, you know, for the kids, or if they have those farm rides and stuff. If when you come across animals in unusual situations, like at malls, especially if they have a zoo at the mall or a zoo at like a carnival or what would you call them? A carnival or like circuses and stuff. Circuses all have been better, and they do have requirements as well when it comes to animals. But I would look out for stuff like that when you're in a strange place that shouldn't or doesn't normally have animals anywhere else in the world, and you come across a whole zoo or petting area of monkeys in cages, and you know, and I would always look if they are behind bars, I would always look for a hatch because a hatch means that they go somewhere else or they can go somewhere else. If there's no hatch in that enclosure, that animal stays in there the entire time. Especially when they have concrete floors and like one stick, that's not enrichment. They need stuff to keep their minds going and get occupied. Just to, you know, stop that stereotypy behavior. But yeah, that was it, guys. Very brief, like I said. If you have any questions about this, because it was very vague and very broad, then feel free to drop me a message. And I will see you next time. But thank you for having the conversation. Feel free to hit me up on Instagram or Facebook. The business is choice.arrow. I always forget because I know there's a dot in there, but I'm like, where does the dot go? So for the Instagram and Facebook, it's choice.arrow. And then the website is up, www.choicearrow.com. Feel free to look through that. We are going to have some products coming soon. I'm very excited about that. Sign up for our newsletter through the website. And you can keep up to date with everything that we have going on. What else? I think that was it. Oh, my personal Instagram is Amor with two R's, A-M-O-R-R underscore 0811. All right. I'll talk to you guys soon.